Today on The Breakdown, it's a $50,000 buy-in event because what the hell? You know what I'm saying? Why the hell not? It's day two, almost $1.5 million for first place because sure. And we've got one of the best in the whole damn world, Jason Kuhn, in this hand, up against a guy you may have never heard of. Granted, never heard of him. I know that. And I only heard of him because he happened to be a dude in a cash game once, and I was like, I think it's that guy. But none of that matters. What matters is blue. The people are blue. Am I right? They swim. Sometimes they fly. That's what it is, right? Do you get what I'm saying? $2 billion. I'm talking about Avatar 2, people. Now streaming in all episodes. Oh, God. This is it. I think The Breakdown's finally happening. And when I say The Breakdown, I don't mean the podcast. I mean my personal, actual breakdown. And it's going to happen now on the show with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
So will you degrade slowly over the course of the episode, or will there be just an inflection moment where you just kind of implode and no longer have your own self, you know?
I think what happens generally is it is always a slow degrading, but sometimes it doesn't occur that way. You know, it occurs to the outside or maybe even to the person breaking down as an immediate, like, big change. But often, you know, there's, like, one more straw on the camel's back, one more, and then suddenly... And the camel's back breaks, and that's the sound it makes.
James Cameron did it to you this time.
Yeah, he did it.
You thought it was only going to be one blue person movie, and you're like, it's been like 8 years. I'm probably safe. I know it's in development, but come on. It's been 8 years.
Here's what I
want. Oh, wait, it's been 10 years. I'm probably safe.
13 years.
13 years. That's when he lowered the hammer on you.
Yeah, 13 years later. We're back, baby. By the way, look, I'm glad they made Avatar 2. It was pretty good. It was certainly worth seeing, whatever. It's a little strange, Grant. 13 years later, when does Avatar 2 come out? It comes out 2 months. Wait, a month and a half. 6 weeks, Grant, after the other big budget blockbuster movie, one of the year, which also has blue people who swim and breathe and live underwater.
Was there a Smurf movie?
No, the Black Panther movie.
Oh.
It's like has Atlantis and Atlanteans in it. And they're blue.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And they have a whole underwater whole thing going. I'm just saying it's weird timing, okay? By the way, Aquaman was supposed to come out this year, too. Aquaman was supposed to come out this year. They pushed it back a year.
Because there's too many swimming movies?
I don't think that's really why they pushed it back, but it was
delay
weird.
That Michael Phelps documentary a few years.
It's not a documentary.
Right, okay.
It's a Michael Phelps action movie.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is it going to be like a bad cop but really good at killing? Or good cop who's also good at killing, but also the chief doesn't like how reckless he is.
He doesn't like how reckless he is in the pool.
Yeah.
No, first of all, Michael Phelps is always going to be the hero of the Michael Phelps action movie. This ain't the Terminator, brah.
I don't know.
You don't know? Michael Phelps, do you think, would ever deign to be the bad guy?
Yeah, I think he would.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting you to be so strong with
well,
that.
Well, I am. Now, is that changing your opinion?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I can see it now. No, I see it. Michael Phelps is the bad guy. Sure. Ryan Lochte's maybe the good guy?
Of course. Good guy, Ryan.
The really dumb good guy.
He's the complete fucking idiot. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, that's okay.
You'd be like Jason Statham's character in Spy.
What would they call the... Oh, that's cool. What would they call the Michael Phelps action thriller movie?
Swim Your Heart Out.
No, they'd call it Breaststroke, obviously. Because of the double entendre!
That's a porn. That's the porn.
Breaststroke. Oh, you're right. That's the Rule 34 version. It's called Crawlstroke. Crawlstroke is not the worst name for like a cool...
Crawlstroke is not an actual swimming stroke, is it?
The crawl.
The crawl?
It's freestyle.
Freestyle, okay.
Yeah, but...
Who calls it crawl?
Everybody in the 70s and 80s called it the crawl stroke.
Maybe it's an East Coast thing?
Nah, I think it was everywhere.
I have never heard that before.
When were you born?
1986.
So like when you were four, maybe you weren't really aware of what they called it. And then it was so the 90s.
And they're like, it's the 90s. We're not calling it the crawl stroke.
It slowly started to be called. You know, apparently they used to call toothpaste tooth polish, and it slowly worked its way into toothpaste. I don't know why. This is what happens.
Okay, maybe you're right.
Language evolves, Grant. Why can't you evolve with it?
Maybe you're right, but I'm... I'm guessing one of two things besides that is happening. Either it's regional or you're wrong.
I'm not wrong, but it could be regional.
Yeah.
But it's not regional, and I'm right.
Oh, okay. As long as you say it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because it's not super regional, at least, because like I grew up on the East Coast, and everyone called it the Crawlstroke, and my family grew up in the Midwest, and they also called it the Crawlstroke. So I would say even if it was like in the West Coast, they call it freestyle, which seems impossible, then it's regional to them. And the
well,
rest
this
of the
might just be a
crawl.
Family thing. Do you know about the poop knife?
What?
I think there's a small percentage of the audience who knows about the poop
knife. Oh, yeah, I just want to say, before you tell us one of the stories, things have taken a bit of a left turn here. Please, let's just put everything about the swimming on hold for a moment and talk about the poop knife. Go.
All right. So I encourage you to Google the poop knife instead of hearing my explanation for complete accuracy, but this is my version of it. This is based on like it being a your family thing.
Yeah.
So there was a Redditor who asked the question about how he like had to poop. I think it was he had to poop at somebody else's house and he couldn't find their poop knife. And apparently he later learned that his family has particularly difficult stool to flush. So
no.
His family has like a special knife to cut up your poop before you flush it. Yeah. It's a legendary Reddit thread.
That is wild.
Yeah.
It's got to be fake, right?
I don't know.
It has to be. Anyway, it's not a family thing for me because my parents are not the only one I ever spoke to about swimming. I was a lifeguard, you know? Like, I learned
there's
swimming
no,
in
there's
many ways.
No way somebody would hire you as a lifeguard if you called it the crawl stroke. They'd be like, get this guy out of my fucking
really
pool.
It was really normal, and I was a wonderful lifeguard.
Okay.
Wonderful, excellent. I saved lives.
How many?
It's, you know, it's uncountable.
Yeah, it's like,
I mean,
it's contextual.
I mean, how many lives have I saved via this podcast? I can't tell you that either, right? Like, because everything I do is a ripple. It ripples out and affects so many people in almost unseen ways, much the way a butterfly might flap its wings in China, Grant.
It might.
Yeah, and, you know, a school is built or something in Africa.
Yeah,
it's unclear what happens.
It's just an immediate situation, yeah.
So it's the same kind of deal. How many lives have I saved? How many lives haven't I saved? It's probably a better question. Obviously a lot, all the people who are dead,
yeah,
all of those people, but everyone else is in play for being a life I've saved.
That's an interesting theory.
Yeah. How many lives haven't I saved? You can really get that right to the decimal point, can't you?
Well, I mean, I think there's probably inaccurate data about how many people have truly died over the course of your lifetime.
That's a fair point.
Yeah.
So you get a rounding error, within a rounding error of like, get within like 100,000 people or something like that.
Well,
probably.
I think it's probably you're going to have to give it more of an error than that.
Really?
I mean, think about how many countries there are and how many don't have great record keeping and stuff.
Well, also think about how we don't really know when people started, really. Right.
Well, I'm just talking about during your lifetime.
Oh, during my lifetime? Yeah. That's all I get credit for?
Yeah.
I thought, we know how many people are dead.
Really?
Look at the books. Look at the records.
Right.
I'm going to ignore the thing you said about a lot of the countries may not have good records.
Yeah, like.
But even, fine, within a million. You got to give me a million, within a million.
I'm going to give you plus or minus 10 million.
Oh, come on. How many people have died in my lifetime anyway?
Plus or minus 10 million.
That total?
I don't know. It's been a lot more.
Well, how many? Take a guess. Take a gander.
That's an interesting question.
I mean, I can sort of answer that actually. It's probably, I'm going to guess 3 billion people have died. It may be more.
Well,
I'm
how
51.
Many,
3 billion people, I'm saying. It could be 4 billion.
How many people existed when you were born in 1908?
Well, there's currently 8 billion people. I think they were like a little under 7. More
it's
or less.
Gotta be way less than that.
Really?
Because we just crossed 7 in like the mid-2000s.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh. Then fucking I don't know.
It might be like 4.
Jeez. Oh, then maybe, I don't know, yeah. But think about all the children who've died.
Great point.
No, I'm
thanks for bringing that up.
No, but I get credit for all of them.
That's on you. That's on you for sure.
by credit, I mean those are the ones I didn't save.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do get credit for all the living children, obviously. For example, your daughter. Just one more person I saved.
Right, of course.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
You must be happy about that. I know you're not happy about much and about people being happy or alive, but you must be happy about that.
That
I saved your daughter's
life. I don't understand what you're trying to do.
I don't know either. I thought we were doing a whole Michael Phelps thing, and now here we are.
I was about to do a thing.
It's fine. I think I was too, but we ended up going somewhere else, and that's good too.
I have a more serious thing to talk about, although still not serious at all.
Oh.
But our answers are going to be less facetious than what we've just been doing.
Okay.
The Michael Phelps thing made me think of this. If you were to cast an athlete in a movie, Which athlete would you want to cast in what type of movie and what role would they play? You don't like this question?
I don't know. It doesn't interest me. Sorry. I know I'm supposed to yes and everything, but it's like, who cares?
That one surprises me that
you
don't
think I would have so many answers for that.
Yeah.
But I just feel like, you know, there's a million athletes. They could be in any movie. Who cares? I don't know what happened. I'm going to kill a bunch of people, I think. Oh, this is the breakdown. The breakdown's happening. Yeah, it is. Going. That's it is. What's going on.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably...
Okay, because normally I'd be like, well, obviously, Tiger Woods. Yeah. And it's Pinocchio or whatever. Yeah. No, I got nothing. I have no energy for this. How about you?
Yeah, I'd rather not now that you've sucked the air out of the room.
I'm sorry.
You sure sucked the air out of the
room. I don't know. It just didn't inspire me, that question, which is weird, because often it would. In fairness to you, really, that's the kind of thing I'd be like, oh, this is great. I know lots. I have lots of answers for that.
Of course.
Yeah, I got nothing.
All right.
At all.
That's fine. Like, who cares? They're mostly going to be terrible actors anyway, so it'd be a waste of time.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, so where are we even going on here? We're going on like size or their look or something?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Who gives a shit?
Yeah.
Fuck it. Let's move on.
Crawlstroke would be a good name for a swimming-based action thriller.
Especially if it was
starred, Prime.
Especially if it starred babies.
Yes. Or swimmers.
Swimming babies, perhaps?
Well, again, that would capture both of those pieces of the Venn diagram.
We have the whole Venn diagram of all demographics in the world who want to see this movie.
It's a four-quadrant movie.
Six.
Babies, quadrant. Swimmers, that's it.
Water.
and popcorn eaters.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everyone wants to see Crawlstroke. Crawl Space, a Crawl Space must have been named something, because that's too good.
It's probably like a B movie from 2004.
Yeah, and probably multiple ones even.
Yeah, and it's just like a bad horror movie thriller type thing.
And when I say multiple ones, I don't mean there's been a lot of sequels. I mean just lots of people have named their cheap-ass movie Crawl Space, because it's a great name.
Yeah.
I'm going to name a movie Crawl Space now.
Yeah.
And not one of mine. Just like a movie that already
exists. Inception should probably just be called
Crawl Space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know how they fold the city, it like kind of turns into a bit of a crawl.
It sort of does. By the way, they fold that city and never do anything with that. It's a little weird.
What they do is they shock the audience with the power of CGI.
It's right. It's really good for the trailer and made everyone want to go see the movie a lot.
Yeah.
Which was, I guess, a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
But Ellen, at the time, I should say Ellen Page, now it's Elliot Page. Elliot Page had this power to reshape the whole city, but seemed pretty ineffective when shit was really going down in these dreams.
Yeah.
How about making the city turn around or make it into a different shape?
Well, that character was a neophyte, though. It was intended to be difficult.
Well, I was disappointed.
With the skills?
Yeah, I would like to see a little more of that action. It's like, okay, I don't mean to go on a rant here, Grant, and maybe this is just part of the breakdown.
It probably is.
But in the Justice League movie... In the Justice League movie, Aquaman's one of the Justice League.
Why do you always say it like that? Aquaman, it's like Prague.
Instead of Aquaman?
Yeah.
Aquaman, I don't know, because I'm looking at the Q really hard. Aquaman is a member of the Justice League. And yet, there are no water-adjacent adventures in the entire movie. It's the Zack Snyder's version is 4 hours. The Joss Whedon one is like 2.5.
But there's like
sewer. There's no water-adjacent action happening.
There's a sewer.
There's sewers everywhere.
There's sewer adjacent.
They're never fighting. They're fighting some like really tough guys in theory. No, water never comes into play. Aquaman could be any dude. Like the fact that he's Aquaman means nothing.
Yeah.
It's a weird decision. Like, why wouldn't you have it by a harbor or something? How about, control water in some way or control sea life?
Yeah.
Let's involve that. Nah. We just like the look of him. He's got cool long hair and he's Jason Momoa. He's huge. Come on.
Yeah.
Dummies.
You fucking idiots. All right. Let's do some poker hand stuff. Hey, this one's actually going to have solver work on it.
Oh my gosh, it's been so long.
Wesley Cannon did solver work on this hand. We have not seen it yet. We're going to take a look at that after we do our analysis, come back and tell you what it had to say.
It's like the old days.
It's like the olden days, like when the Old West.
Tooth polish.
You had tooth polish. Everybody died when they were 41 at most.
Yeah.
It was great.
It was fabulous.
Because nobody got old, you know?
Exactly. You got to be like, we're young forever.
Until we die right away. All right.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is a 50K Triton. It's a 6 max event. Sounds like a difficult event. Although, these Tritons do attract a fair amount of whales.
Yes, they do, Grant. Yes, they do.
We believe that, or Jonathan at least believes that one of the players in this hand is one of those whales.
I feel pretty strongly that this guy is rich and bad at poker.
Okay.
And I'm basing this not on this hand, to be clear. Actually, not at all based on this hand. So I don't even know if we're going to think any of his decisions are bad. I don't remember. But I watched him play in a cash game with the best players in the world, and he was the only non-best player in the world, and he was, whoa, like, what are you doing, bro? And, like, losing insane pots that he should never be in over and over and over again. And once in a while, you know, just randomly clicking buttons against guys who you can't do that against and be successful.
Yeah.
So, you know.
All right, so Jonathan's strong suspicion is that Chaulov is this player's name.
Vladi
Chaulov is not a pro.
I think he's very rich, so good for him.
Well, he better be if he's playing these things and he's not good at poker.
Yeah, I mean, the cash game I saw, it was a $500, $1,000 cash game. So, and this is a 50K, so yeah.
Yeah. All right, so Jason Kuhn is a pro.
Yes.
Is very good. Is the current champion of the heads-up duel, and it doesn't seem like he's going to get challenged, right?
Nope. I think it's already passed by.
He won 800K from Helmuth, eliminating all of Helmuth's profits.
Not all of them, but almost all of them.
Almost all of Helmuth's profits, and... finally, the brat has been dethroned, and nobody's going to take on Kuhn. Everybody was lining up to take on Helmuth, but nobody's going to take on Kuhn.
I think had Helmuth won this and had beaten Kuhn, I think Kuhn himself would have probably just challenged him again for 1.6.
Yeah,
but certainly, as you're saying, people have lined up to play Phil Helmuth at 1.6 buy-in.
Right. And if people have an edge on Kuhn, that's not a huge edge.
Right.
So it's
what's the point?
Yeah. Why risk 800K there when there are much bigger edges you can find in poker?
Yeah. There's just no reason to do anything like the only. I mean, honestly, what you do is you get together with Jason Kuhn. And you're like, so we're gonna do a thing here where like no matter who wins, we pay back the guy. And then what's the point of it?
No, there's no point.
So stupid. Yeah. It's just what you'd be doing to raise your brand.
Yeah.
But it doesn't seem like that's what's going on. Yeah. So Jason Kuhn just gets to keep the money and life is good.
Good for him.
Yeah.
So he's this probably happened before that, I would guess.
This happened in I believe September 2022. It did.
So yeah, I think he just beat Helmuth in what, October or November.
It was pretty recent.
Yeah.
So
it's 2023 now as we're recording this, so we're in the future.
In fact, he beat Helmuth early December. Okay. It was two and a half months later.
Cool. All right. So we are in the mid stages of this 6 max 50K.
Correct.
Jason Kuhn is on the button. It folds to him. It's 10K, 20K. He's got 60 bigs, 1.2 million.
Yeah.
He's got two jacks. What a joy.
Yep.
He's going to open to 45K. Jack of diamonds, jack of clubs. Obviously, no problem with this.
Right.
Chaulov came into day two. This is day two now of this event as the chip leader of the event.
Yes.
This is the believed whale by Jonathan. He has ace, deuce of diamonds in the small blind and 2 million chips in front of him, 100 bigs. Does this feel like a mandatory three bet?
I don't know if it. How deep is Kuhn again?
60
Sorry.
Bigs. Pay 60. Attention. Pay attention. Even if you're breaking down mentally, you need to.
There's a lot going on in this little orb that's resting on top of my head.
There's an orb resting on top of your head.
Yeah.
Oh, I see it now. Yeah, it's kind of floating.
Yeah. It's a breakdown.
Yeah.
So, I don't think it's a mandatory three bet. No, at 60 bigs effective. I think we can call here. I don't think we should call that often. At 60 bigs, but I think we can call sometimes.
All right. Well, Phil Nagy is in the big blind, and he is the owner or one of the owners of ACR and WPN, whatever, that whole network of things. And he's got 30 bigs. Does that change your opinion?
I mean, by calling, we are going to induce a few more squeezes than we otherwise would, which sucks a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't think it's that big a deal, though. It's basically it's like one and a half blinds to call, and if we lose it, we lose it.
Yep.
Like, I don't care that much. If I'm playing this hand as a call, I'm playing to try and win a really big pot. I don't mind Phil Nagy coming in, by the way, with this hand specifically. Three betting's okay, too, but we don't always want to three bet this hand anyway. I think either one's fine. I think I'd probably lean at 60 bigs deep, unless I think I'd lean at this part of the tournament to more towards a call than to a raise, even. Do you agree with that?
I typically am less aggressive than you are to the small blind, so especially in tournaments. So yes, I do agree with that.
Oh, okay.
Although I think there's obviously a good argument for three betting.
Of course.
Kuhn's button range is pretty wide and we have a blocker.
Yes.
And if we get called, we have a hand that can flop well.
Right.
These are all good reasons.
True that.
But of course it's fine to have some nut flush draws or nut flushes in our range out of the small blind when we flat. It's not a bad idea, right? Like if three diamonds come, we want to be able to have the nuts sometimes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, like we just can't three bet all of our, I mean, this is one of the better three betting hands, clearly, like when the button opens. Yeah. So like, of course we could three bet all our suited wheel aces and it would be fine. But like also like we've got 100 blinds in front of us. The gain we're going to get by three betting if we get a fold out of Kun right now isn't that big. Like, it's not that big a win.
No, but everything's something.
Of course. Yeah. But like, we're going to pick up 4% or something like on our stack or something. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal. Like, but this is the kind of hand that can win a much bigger pot. And so, I don't know. I like calling here when we're this deep.
We're also unlikely to change Kun's button opening frequency. It's not like the main event against a random player where if you three bet them once, they might stop opening the button wide and you get to get more heads up, small versus big.
It's an excellent fucking point, dude.
Yeah. Thank you. That's why I'm here. All right. So he flats. Charlov flats out of the small blind. Ace, deuce, diamonds. That brings in Phil Nagy with his 650K in the big blind and ace four off. He's got a mandatory call or shove. I guess you could shove. Do you prefer shoving? It's kind of a lot of blinds.
I think we're just supposed to call
32
mostly.
Blinds.
Yeah, like we have a real tournament still. We can call here, not do anything, and still have 30 blinds. Sounds great.
Well, what about when we're the owner of ACR and Jason Kuhn's at the table? Should we just be shoving instead?
I would be a little concerned, A, that, well, because it's Shaolov, maybe I wouldn't be. Is it Shaolov? Yeah. But, like, again, if it's a lot, like, if Joe Chung is sitting in the small blind and flats this, right?
Yeah.
I'd be worried that he is flatting with hands that can absolutely call my squeeze, and that's one of the reasons why he's flatting.
Yeah.
You know? So my antenna would actually go off a little bit unless I've seen this guy flat a lot of these opens from the small blind. Mm-hmm. Now, Shaolov, we probably have seen him do that based on some of my knowledge about him.
Sure.
He's probably just playing a lot of hands and things are going well. Mm-hmm. So that actually opens me up to squeezing a little bit more. But mostly I think we just want to call and see a flop and be cool with it.
Yeah, that's what Nagy does. Pot's 155K.
Yeah.
Nitro betting is 155K times as likely to make you feel happy as a small dead fly in your bathroom.
And that's more about the small dead fly not bringing much to the table than nitro betting.
Well, yeah,
fairness.
155 times as likely is a significant.
It's 155,000.
155,000 times. Yeah, as likely. Yeah, that's a significant difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there is, what I'm saying is there's a very small chance that small fly will bring you great joy. You'll just be like, hot damn, another dead fly in my bathroom. What a day.
You made it sound like that did bring him joy.
What I'm saying is it could.
Oh.
But it's a very small chance. Right. That's why it's 155,000 times more likely that nitro betting will bring you joy. Are you following me? Do you need a lesson in math?
Or I thought it was 155,000 times more joy, not more likely to bring
joy. No, it's likeliness. We're talking on a scale of likeliness. We're not talking about the joy scale right now. The joy scale is a whole different conversation that has more to do with mammals than insects, and I'm not going to get into it. Okay?
Do insects really feel...
It doesn't matter if the insect feels. The insect is the object, not the subject.
But perhaps the insect could be both.
If you want to write some sort of...
fan fiction?
Some sort of short story, fan fiction. Yeah, make it all porny if you want. I know you want to.
It doesn't have to be like that. It could be like there's a dead fly. There's another fly who sees that dead fly and gets joy. In fact, because they're the same species, maybe that fly gets more joy. Than the average
for porny
human.
Reasons, right?
And then you know that same fly sees nitro betting and is kind of unmoved because none of it makes sense. Just lights,
right?
Just lights of the fly.
But the humans,
so species matters.
But the humans nitro betting is more joy. Explain the benefits, Jonathan,
of being human rather than a fly.
I'd prefer if you explain the nitro betting benefits because we can do this podcast for however long we want, but I'd prefer it not to last for 3 hours.
That sounds good. Well, the benefits of nitro betting are thus, Grant. Number one, of course, we have our monthly poker tournament, which is the Poker Guys monthly poker tournament. It's fucking awesome. Number two, there's other awesome shit that you get by using the link when you sign up for Nitro, i.e.
What link where? You?
It's
I
in
can't
the
believe
description
it.
Of the podcast, obviously. I thought you'd maybe had said that too, because obviously I'm never listening to anything anymore.
Of course not.
But as I was saying before I was really interrupted, you know, you get to do awesome things, get to be part of stuff like our March Madness pools, which Nitro often will put up some free money if you participate, or Survivor pools for the NFL. They do bracket stuff. Like, you can bracketize things, generally March Madness, but they do other bracketing, too, now.
They bracket anything you like.
Yeah, and that's fun and cool. There are just some awesome things, and it's free, and it's great, and you're happy if you know it, and you clap your hands.
Yeah. Use the link in the description when you sign up. You get access to all of our cool promotions. They come down the pipe every so often, and they're always really good. We will see you there. Get some poker, sports betting, casino games, all the stuff.
I thought of some more benefits.
Okay.
You live longer. Mm. You prosper. You're just physically bigger.
Okay.
I would say significantly smarter. You're much more dangerous. You might be able to like do some sort of creative actions that you otherwise wouldn't. Like if you're a fly, can flies like write and paint? But humans can.
Oh, no, you're back on the fly. You're back on the fly.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you might have forgotten a whole section of time.
I don't think so.
Well, mostly they don't.
It's crawl stroke.
Okay.
Crawl stroke.
Speaking of physically bigger, so recently when I pick my daughter up from daycare, mm-hmm. she's been saying, "You got bigger." Like every time that I get in the car, she's like, "You got bigger, Papa."
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Have you gotten bigger?
I've lost weight in that interim, so I don't know. Hmm. Did I get taller? Do I look taller to you?
Nope.
Huh.
Nope. I guess she's just, is that like from a book they read maybe at her school or something?
Probably something. Yeah. It's a French immersion school. They talk about all sorts of weird French shit. Yeah,
maybe they could teach her what bigger means because she doesn't seem to understand.
I'm paying enough, they might as well. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
It's a French emergent school?
Immersion.
Immersion.
Yeah.
Huh.
They learn French, they learn English. They learn.
That's going
to
help.
They learn how to lose a war. Am I right, France? Anyway, back to the hand.
Okay.
There's 155K in the pot pre-flop. We're going three ways to the flop.
Okay.
Got Kuhn on the button with jacks, Chowlov in the small blind with ace, deuce of diamonds, and Nagy in the big blind with ace, four off. The flop is five of hearts, seven of hearts, eight of diamonds. So not exactly the flop Kuhn was looking for when he gets called by both blinds.
True.
Not great.
I mean, yeah, the big blind's almost worse than the small blind, really.
Well, for sure.
But
Chowlov has sets on this board, for sure. You know,
and he can have suited connectors, which hit this board pretty hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And of course, there's two hearts. Kuhn might get check raised if he continues by a lot of draws.
Yep.
So it's a scary board for Jax. I don't know what Kuhn would do if checked to him. It would be interesting to know. But we're not going to find out because Chowlov is going to lead for 70K. What do you think?
Why?
Well, because he thinks this is his board, I guess.
But it's the big blinds board more than it's his board.
It is. It is.
Chowlov has a lot of like Jack 10 suiteds. I guess that's a gut shot, but he doesn't actually have that anyway. And a lot of like King Jack suiteds. And okay, I guess he could have pocket nines and be leading, or even a set and be leading. But the big blind, as we said, connects pretty well with this board and is not folding to a bet here. So I don't know why we're betting this at all.
Well, if we get rid of the big blind, we have a decent chance.
Yes, I agree with that.
And it's definitely a scary board for anybody who doesn't connect with it. Even if they have a hand like jacks or aces, like a, you know,
no doubt.
It's you can start building a story for the future.
For sure.
So I think I agree it would be a much better lead in the big blind. I think it's interesting out of the small blind. I think it's not easy to play against a player who's willing to do this.
This feels like the kind of thing Andy Black would do.
Andy Black. Yeah, wow, just like what a callback.
Lead out of nowhere with no real obvious reason.
I have no sense of Andy Black's style of play or anything that he... Oh.
Don't you remember that Christian Harder hand?
Yeah, I do remember that. When he like kind of nuts. He had A7?
A7 off. He went completely nuts with no real obvious reason to it at all. And Christian Harder put it all together and crushed him.
Crushed his soul.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, if Kuhn knows anything about Chowlov...
I have to believe he does.
This kind of chops two ways because, one, Chowlov can have a wider range out of the small blind. That means he can have maybe every two-pair combo in suited versions and every straight combo in suited versions, along with all the sets, which sucks. But that also means he has a wider bluffing range.
You also may not think that a lot of good players... Sorry, not good players. Amateur players are going to lead really strong hands out of nowhere. Like, mostly they check to the raiser because they don't understand that this is a board Jason Kuhn's likely to check back.
Yeah.
Right? So they check to get the bet in first, and then they do whatever they're going to do.
If we're giving Chowlov credit, he is doing a board-based play here.
If we're giving him credit, yes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if we should or not. I mean, based on what I saw, it felt like everything felt like random button pushing to me.
Well, but that's just your opinion based on 5 minutes of research, and it could be wrong.
It's not just 5 minutes of research. I actually watched him play for like an hour.
Okay, fine.
Against all these guys.
An hour of research.
Okay. That's a lot. Yeah. You know, if you sit down at a table with some people, 10 minutes is often all you need to be able to understand someone.
But I'm sure you could cut out 1 hour sections of me playing poker.
You would never make the decision Chowlov's making.
Okay, fair. Fine. Anyway.
He
leads for 70K into 155. Yeah, okay. With ace, deuce of diamonds, 5, 7, 8, two hearts, one diamond. He at least has some back doors.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, the backdoor diamonds is something, and it is at least not Jason Kuhn's board.
Right.
Sure.
Nagy folds with his ace four.
Yep.
He has a gut shot, but it's a terrible gut shot. Maybe he could have called if he had the ace of hearts, but he does not.
Also,
he's
got Jason Kuhn behind him.
Yeah. Is there anything to do but call as Jason Kuhn?
I don't think so. We have a very straightforward call. Raising is weird because if Chalov's got a big made hand, he could just re-raise us, and we're going to have to throw away our good hand. If Chalov has a big draw, he could re-raise us.
We just have to throw away jacks.
We have to throw it away anyway. Or we hold on and we get destroyed by the made hands, and we often get beat by the big draws anyway, right? So neither of those sound like good options. If Chalov is bluffing, we would just chase him away. If he's got him, if he's just betting top pair, we'd mostly chase him away. Why do we want to do any? Those are all bad outcomes, right?
Yep.
When we have him crushed, I think a call makes all the sense in the world. We're in position. It isn't like it's ever going to go check, check if we don't want it to. Seems like an obvious call.
I agree. Luckily, we have solver work on this, and I'm guessing the solver is going to be like, Kuhn should raise 40% of the time.
Oh, it's going to be interesting to see.
I'm guessing that's going to be what's going to go on with the solver.
Kuhn does not have the jack of hearts in his hand, so like that maybe makes it a little bit more of a tasty raise. But
tasty.
Yeah, but it seems to me like it's a call. Anyway.
It's definitely a call in my opinion, but I just can feel the solver saying, like, he's got to raise. You know, I can feel it. Pot's 295K now.
Okay.
The turn is a good one for Chalov. It is the four of diamonds.
Wow.
So a six is now a straight. Chalov can rep that. More importantly for his hand, he has the nut flush draw and an actual wheel draw that can beat Kuhn.
I mean, a six is also a chop on the board. So even if he successfully or unsuccessfully reps it, like, he's going to get half the pot almost always if a six comes, right?
I'm just saying a six is a straight.
Oh, saying he can rep it. He can. I misunderstood what you're saying.
If he was leading with 5, 6, 7, 6, a six of hearts, whatever.
Right. One of the draws comes in.
Yeah.
And he also picks up the combo draw out of nowhere. Yeah, it's incredible.
It's a good. I mean, once you've taken the slam on the flop, you kind of have to bet again on the turn now, right?
I think with this card, this is like the dream card to keep betting.
I guess you could check raise. You could hope that Kuhn's going to bet, but he's going to check this card so frequently.
He's not betting anything except, I think, 2 sixes or like 7, 6. Like, he's betting the straight, but I think he's not betting anything else.
Yeah, so we need to bet.
I think 100% this is a bet. Our fake draw comes in. We actually pick up 2 actual good draws. Oh my God, let's go.
How big?
There's 295 in the pot. You know, 220,000, something like that.
Yeah.
What does he do?
175.
That can't be that bad, honestly. No. It's a pretty binary spot for a Kuhn, right? So it's possible that I was even thinking, like, do we need to go big on this board? I don't know if we do.
It looks almost a little fishy to go big on this board.
Well, there's 2 hearts on the flop. So we could have made the straight and be like, I'm going to charge the hearts.
Charge the hearts, try to get max value out of any sort of two-pair set.
And, you know, in theory, also charging the diamonds that are, you know, backdooring their way home here. So that's the reason.
Like A7 of diamonds or something.
Yeah. Also 9-10 suited or even off could be here.
Yeah.
You know, like stuff like that. Jack 10. We could be charging all that or forcing some of it to fold. So I guess I do like a raise or not a raise, but a bigger bet size now that I'm saying all
a
that.
Raise of the size of the bet.
Yes, that's right. Let's elevate that.
Yeah.
So 175, I guess, to me is a little small, but it can't be that bad.
No, I agree. All right. Now is when Jason Kuhn has to
pull the trigger and go all in.
That's some people will do that.
Yes.
But does this become an entirely opponent-dependent decision, or do you go to theory land and make a decision based on that?
Well, I think we start in theory land at least, and we see what we come up with, and then we let our opponent color where we, you know, like we put a lot of weight in our opponent and where we're going from there.
All right.
So, for example, this board has gotten very polarizing now, and so a lot of hands shouldn't want to continue. Like, two pair isn't betting anymore. I don't know. Is two pair really betting anymore? Is the set betting on this turn?
It's possible they are, but it's unclear.
They probably aren't. Mostly they're not.
So that's a potential good thing for us as far as he might be bluffing.
Yep.
Beyond that, 9-10 missed, jack 9, jack 10 missed.
Hearts missed.
These are all good things.
If somehow our opponent can have backdoor diamonds, we have the jack of diamonds in our hand, but if somehow it turns out he can. Okay, well, he just picked up some equity and could continue, and that's another reason. You know, there's now 2 flush draws, is my point.
Yeah.
So there's that. I mean, as you're saying, against certain players, this is an auto fold.
Yes.
Anyway, right? Like, against a lot of players, this is just like, when they continue here, they just always have a 6.
But based on how you've profiled Chalov, this is not a call.
This, for, This is what?
An auto call.
An auto call. I thought you said not a call. Yeah, I agree. I think I've seen, I mean, here's one hand he played from the cash game that I saw that like they made a big deal about because he won the hand and he got, you know, Timothy, what's his name, to fold. True Teller. It's opened True Teller Kuznetsov. That's it. That's who it is. Three bets to $12,000. Chaulov cold calls the whole thing with queen 10 of spades. The flop is somehow deuce of clubs, five of clubs, deuce of diamonds. I don't know how. And
how can they put that flop out there?
Yep. True Teller bets and out of position, Chaulov just calls. He just calls anyway with no backdoors, no nothing. The turn's the four of diamonds. He checks. True Teller bets again. Chaulov moves in for $100,000. True Teller bets $30,000. Chaulov moves in for $108,000. So whatever we want to think, if you say, oh, he's not a fish, he's really good, and fine. He's spewy and put lots of chips in when he's got nothing going on with the board, which is all we care about in this case. He's clearly capable of bluffing.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, so Kuhn has to call, right?
Kuhn has to call this. But it doesn't feel great.
It's uncomfortable.
Also, you're like, there's so many bad cards for me on the river, and I'm not going to know what I even like and what I don't like.
Right? It also seems that a player that would make a bluff like that without any combinatorial reason might continue betting with hands like two pair and a set. I feel like those are comorbid.
That's interesting. But then they often aren't going to fire again on the river, I think.
That's probably true.
Right.
Anyway, it's uncomfortable, but I think Kuhn has to make the call.
I think he does.
And he does.
Okay.
The pot's 645K.
Okay.
The river is the five of clubs. It pairs the board. So that's another way that Kuhn could be beat somehow, some way, if maybe Chaulov had some like 5X of diamonds type hand.
7-5.
Well, he was already beat by that.
True.
I've been talking about new ways to be beat.
Oh, fair enough. But now he's beating 8-7 if it continued on the turn.
That is true. So
goes both ways.
Five of hearts, seven of hearts, eight of diamonds, four of diamonds, five of clubs. So two flush draws both missed, including Chaulov's. Should Chaulov go for the gusto, as they say?
I mean, what are we repping if we bet again? We're essentially repping pocket sixes if we bet
any
one more
six.
Time.
Any six.
Sure. 7-6, 5-6 suited, I guess. A-6 suited, sure. But a six.
We're repping a six. We're repping some full houses that might have gotten here this way.
That chose to bet the turn.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. 8-8, 7-7, 7-5 suited.
Yeah.
Fine. 5-4 suited, I guess. But I guess we could have 5-4 suited and bet the flop. We would just lead the flop. Actually, that's not crazy. That hand makes a lot more sense to do it with, anyway.
I want to ask this question.
Yeah.
Does having the backdoor diamonds, meaning it's less likely that Kuhn has the backdoor diamonds, make you less want to bet?
A little bit. A little bit, but I don't think it's a huge factor.
It's worse to have hearts.
Hearts,
right?
Are so much worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think it's that big a deal. Should we bet this? I mean, Kuhn called on the turn. That's a problem.
He could really have a monster himself.
Yes. He could have hearts, and we might just be able to... One more bet might get him off the nut heart draw, though.
Yeah.
So if that's what we're trying... Okay, if we're just trying to fold out hearts, we don't have to bet very big.
But
if we
might want to fold out over pairs and top pair and stuff like that, too.
Yes.
Which we definitely could do in some cases on this type of a board.
Yep.
Right? I think we should...
I think so.
I think if we should hope to do that as well. I mean, not just missed draws.
We don't really block anything or unblock anything we want to unblock, except we don't have hearts in our hand. But this board is really kind of like, you know, cooperated with like staying a little scary to most of Kuhn's range.
Yeah.
I think it's a reasonable thing to pull the trigger here.
I agree.
I think we should. I think since we decided to bet the flop for no earthly reason and then the turn, which makes all the sense in the world, why don't we continue here? We're kind of always losing right now, right? Unless Kuhn has king, queen of hearts and played it, you know, all careful. Like, by the way, he might bluff us off it on the river anyway if we check.
It's possible.
So... I think I want to continue.
Okay. The question then becomes,
yes,
do we want to size it in such a way that scares Kuhn's tournament a little bit? Mm. Or do we want to make it a story that is reasonable to say, I want to get called by top pair and over pair?
That's a cool question. Well, Kuhn's got about 900K back, I think.
Seems about right.
The pot has 645 in it. So, yeah. So we can do a lot of fear-mongering
shove if we really wanted to put the max pressure on.
If we shove, it's going to be very hard for him to call with anything that isn't at least a six,
yeah,
if not a full house.
Right.
If he has a six, he's going to really think about
it. He's going to call with a six, probably, but...
I mean, knowing it, because it's us, if we're Chaulov, he's going to call for sure. Against some players, he might find a fold, but... The problem is he opened the button, so he really can have like these full houses and he can have sixes. He can have stuff like that, you know?
Yeah.
But still, he's got a lot of other hands too, right? He's got, basically he has all the overpairs. He has hearts. He has 9-10. Those are the hands he has, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess he could have like weird backdoor stuff too. I guess he had like Jack 10 of hearts or Jack 10 of diamonds, right? Those are hands that he can show up with. Yeah. All those hands. Now, some of those hands were beating, but again, they may bluff us off if we check. So, because we only have ace high, we're probably folding if he bets any amount. So how do we want to size it? I don't think we need to go like full on all in, even though I do agree that would be the most, that'll have huge power.
Yeah.
If I'm, I don't know if Chalov is aware enough of his own image, but I'd be worried that my image as like the spewy crazy guy going all in may actually get me more calls rather than less, that I'm a little too polarizing.
It is still Jason Kuhn's tournament life and he gets to be playing in the Triton 50K with a bunch of whales.
It's true. That's a fair point. And he actually still has most of his chips.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting point. I feel like a pot-sized bet, though, is going to do most of that same amount of damage.
You're probably right.
Kuhn's going to really care about that. You know, like, oh, I'm down to frickin' 15 blinds if I call and lose. Like, that sucks.
Yeah.
You know? I don't have to do that. I can just fold and have so many more. I can have, like, almost 50 blinds. Like, that seems like a pretty good deal.
I think a pot-sized bet is necessary, though. We need to target pretty strong hands because yes. Kuhn usually, unless he has a somewhat strangely played draw, he has overpairs and top pair a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, I agree.
Unless he has a slow played monster. So I think we need to try to get those hands to fold.
I agree. I think you're right. If we're going to do this, well, I mean, we don't have to do that, right? We can do with the thing where we target the draws, we bet small. We can target the overpairs, we bet big.
So we shouldn't bet medium. We shouldn't bet like 300K.
That seems like the worst, right? Yeah. We should bet like, what do we bet on the turn? We bet 175. We could bet like 200K to try and fold out Jack 10 and stuff like that. Not to fold them out. But so that way, to take away their opportunity to bluff us out of the pot, though. And by the way, fold out some better ace highs that are also heart draws.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Or we bet pot or near pot to really go after all the other stuff.
Yeah.
That sounds like, and I think we should, I agree with you. Let's go after all of it. Why screw this up? Like, it'd be so dumb sort of, like, let's throw 20 more blinds at this and get him to fold almost everything.
Yeah,
let's
600K. That seems about right.
I like it.
Chalov goes 450. So a little smaller than I would like. He's still, it's on the bigger side.
It's a tough spot with Jack's when he bets 450, even if you know he's spewy.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah.
Like, it might be enough. I mean, what's Kuhn's going to be left with about this much if he calls and loses, right? So that's like 22, 23 blinds, something like that.
So the Jack of Diamonds and two Jacks are both somewhat problematic cards to hold.
Not ideal.
We block Jack 9, we block Jack 10 very heavily, and we block backdoor Diamonds.
Yeah, we'd really rather have like two Black Queens here.
Yeah,
right.
For sure. Huge difference.
Yeah.
Huge difference. Still, this guy's spewy.
This guy is real spewy, does all sorts of weird things, and there aren't that many combinations of hands that feel comfortable betting all three streets, right?
There shouldn't be.
There shouldn't be anyway. You're right. Maybe he bet two pair on the turn and filled up on the river. But most players don't do that. Most players check the turn or check the river when they, like, when you have the six, you could bet the straight on the river even when the board pairs. You could do it. Some players aren't going to, though, right?
This guy probably is.
Yeah, that's true. He probably is. And it's probably okay to do that, except now you're trying to get called by those overpairs, which are going to struggle to call this amount, you know? Well, are they? I don't know if they are, actually.
So I think, I have no idea what the solver is going to say because I never
know. I don't know either.
I never know. But I my guess would be that the solver would really not like to have nines, tens, or jacks as the overpairs because those block the straight draws that missed. And it probably doesn't want to have a diamond or a heart either, would be my guess.
But I mean, having the jack of clubs isn't so bad, right? Because the jack of clubs shouldn't factor in, but the jack of diamonds hurts a little bit.
Well, the jack of clubs factors in that it is further blocker to jack nine and jack 10.
But jack nine isn't jack nine, jack 10 aren't calling the turn.
They're not. What do you mean calling? We're talking about Chalov's hand. We're blocking.
Oh, I'm sorry. Of course you're right. I lost my, well, it's break. The breakdown continues.
Yeah.
It's fine. Of course you're right. We're talking about Chalov's hand. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So we have a bad overpair as far as blockers are concerned.
Right.
Nines is the worst overpair, not only by rank, but also by blocking straight draws. Nines with a nine of diamonds is the worst overpair to have.
I mean, we block 9-6.
I guess maybe tens is worse then.
Yeah, tens feels worse.
Tens with a 10 of diamonds might be the worst one.
Yep.
Making this the second worst one or the third worst one, depending on if this
I mean, tens, nice. Also the 10 of hearts. The 10 of hearts.
Really, oh, right, right.
The 10 of diamonds.
Hearts is worse
two,
than diamonds.
Two red tens, though, is maybe the worst possible hand.
Yeah.
Right? That worst possible overpair.
So we're among the worst hero call hands that we could have here.
It ain't that great.
It would be better to have ace eight, right? Because then we block some full houses.
Right.
Just in case he could play full houses this way. Right, so it would probably be better to have a seven as well.
I wonder. I can't believe that Chaulov, I mean, he's leading this tournament after day one. He can't be like betting ace eight, flop turn river, right? He
just no,
can't
no, 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 right? no. I don't believe that.
Okay, because if he could do that, then I guess we just have to call with everything and everything.
No, I don't believe
that. But it
that.
Can't be that. That's too much. Okay.
But so I guess the question becomes, even though this is among our weaker bluff catchers for multiple reasons, is it still a call because it's an overpair against a guy who's known to spew?
I mean, so you were saying before, like, is this, are we starting with theory or are we starting with opponent? We start with theory, and now here
theory
we are with opponent.
Theory kind of says fold.
Yeah, theory's like, we're leaning pretty heavily towards a fold, we think. Anyway, we'll see what the solver says again.
Our theory says that.
Yeah, right. Good enough, whatever. Yeah. The opponent says, okay, first of all, we know he's capable of bluffing for sure.
Yeah.
He may be way more than just capable of bluffing.
He might be a ubiquitous bluffer.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that he's the chip leader coming to day two makes me think, maybe he just got lucky and coolered some people, but my guess is, you know, he's been putting a lot of chips in the pot, a lot.
Yep.
You know, and Kuhn probably knows all about this guy.
I would guess.
And so let's say we know that this guy is full of bluffs, just full of them.
Sure.
Does that mean we just have to call? With jacks,
yep.
Anyway, we're just like,
yeah, I think it does.
Just got a call. Like I have some hands I'm folding. Like I missed my draws. 9-10 missed. The hearts missed. Backdoor diamonds missed. Sometimes I'll have that a little bit. I have an eight that I sometimes find a fold with.
It's a better call.
You're right. Eight's a better call. Seven's a better call as well. Yeah, no, you're right. Of course, you're right, sir. I just have to call with most of my good hands here. Is where we'd end up if we're going to make this call, right?
Yeah.
That's what we have to say to ourselves. And they're like, okay, well, Jax is not that bad. I don't have the Jack of Hearts. That's actually pretty great.
Yeah.
A Jack is less important than a nine or than two tens and maybe and probably two nines also, right? Okay. I don't think this is easy. I don't think this is obvious.
I don't either.
Unless we know Chaulov is wild. And I know he's pretty out there. I don't know if he's wild.
Also, from our experience in this hand alone, we know that Chaulov bet the flop with a hand that has almost nothing to do with the board. He continued on the turn when he picked up equity. I would have liked to know if the queen of spades came on the turn, was he going to continue anyway?
Right.
Because if he was, then this is not a call.
Of course it is. Yeah, hard to know.
Yeah.
Hard to know. It's such a random stab on the flop, but it's cheap, and he's the chip leader, and so he might just be doing stuff like that, and it just works a lot, and it's fine, right? I mean, it seems ridiculous, but whatever. He can afford to just make small mistakes like that. It doesn't really hurt him as the chip leader that much, right?
Except that it can lead to this.
Right.
Which
well,
is...
unless he gets Kuhn to fold, and then he wins another nice
but
pot.
But he does not.
Of course he doesn't.
Jason Kuhn makes the call. He's the hero of the world.
Jason Kuhn once again.
I am...
Flex it.
Very curious to see what the solver has to say
Me
about
too.
This call. Let's find out.
Okay.
The solver has spoken. Wesley Cannon did this work. Thank you, Wesley.
Thank you, Wesley.
All right. So going back to the flop. Chaulov should check his whole range on this board, even if it was heads up, even if Nagy wasn't in the pot.
Oh,
so
really?
Does not love the lead on this board. Wesley says, because this is good for the big blind range, not the small blind range,
yes,
just like you
said.
Brought up on the podcast. So that all makes sense.
Good.
Cool. Hey, big surprise. Kuhn should call on the flop.
Yeah, of course.
That's not a surprise. On the turn, the solver does like betting ace, deuce of diamonds, or hearts. Makes lots of sense. We
good.
Picked up equity with both hands. They're both strong draws. And for value, he can bet 7-8 and better. So the solver can still bet top two and sets on this board.
The solver is just like, YOLO!
The solver is known to YOLO. All right, so there's a caveat to what the solver wants for Kuhn, which is to raise most of his hands to fold out weak bluffs. But Wesley says that he didn't give Chaulov the option to 3-bet the turn, so the output may be different if he had. And Wesley goes on to say the solver is only as good as the information is given.
If you know you're never getting 3-bet, like that feels different anyway. Because you can raise with impunity, essentially,
right.
And then check back the river. that sounds, that makes a lot of sense.
So that's probably a null output.
Yeah, I can't take that seriously, because if we can fold out straight draws right now for free, basically, and never pay for it, we can essentially click back this bet, fold out some stuff, and just check back all rivers that aren't jacks.
Yeah,
and actually even jacks, I think we just check back all rivers. Like that's a deal and a half.
Yep,
sign me up.
All right, let's get to the good stuff.
Okay, good.
The river. The solver wants Chalov to give up with his hand. Just check it. Hope it's okay to, like, you know, just give up on this hand and be done with it.
Okay.
He can value bet straights and better, which is not a surprise.
Yep.
Kuhn should mostly fold, but a call is break even.
Okay.
So it's not, like, horrible to call. Wes says even up to, like, as bad as ace nine is a break even call, according to the solver.
Ace nine.
Yeah.
Even though we're blocking 9-10?
Yeah. We're blocking 9-6 also, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it's true. We are blocking 9-6.
So there is one thing that was a very, like, interesting brain teaser almost that Wesley gave us, which was that the solver actually output that the best jacks to call with for Kuhn are the diamond and the heart. And this is because then we unblock Chalov's worst bluffs. How is it?
Let me say this. Bluffs? When you say it's because, this is Wesley's interpretation of why. Yes. It's not because. We don't know why the solver does it. We can only guess.
Yeah. Of course. But if you think about it this way.
Yeah.
If Chalov were playing GTO poker, he would not, if he had Jack 10 or Jack 9 suited and he got to the river, his worst versions of that would be diamonds and hearts to bluff with, because that means that Jason Kuhn has more calls because he doesn't have those draws in his hand.
Right. He'd be like, I hate having hearts in my hand right now.
Yeah. Which then leads to Jason Kuhn's best bluff catcher with jacks to be with the diamond and the heart if Chalov is thinking that way.
And acting that way.
Yeah. Yes. So it's a stretch to think that it actually is that.
So right? It's like, so in theory that means, like, oh gosh, when he pulls the trigger on a bluff, he's so much less likely to have a heart or a diamond in his hand, so having those in my hand is good, because now he doesn't have, there's less of those for him to have.
But it's just,
but that's like assuming a lot
of
stuff.
This is the turtles all the way down situation.
Like Chalov has to be, as you're saying, acting that way for real and thinking all about that and acting that way. I don't think any of that.
It could also be argued that having a diamond is just bad, because you block hands that he gets here with and decides to bluff with, because he's just the guy who's going to do that.
I mean, by the way, it's not that you should never bluff with, like, your missed flush draws just because they miss and you're like, oh, I block him having missed draws too. You can still bluff with some of them. You just can't bluff with all of them all the time. Right. So, okay. This is all marginal stuff anyway, once we get into the deep webs of the solver corners, but deep corner of the solver webs. You know what I'm saying? But like, I don't think Chalov in reality is thinking about any of this stuff.
Probably not.
I don't believe. And so if he isn't, then Kuhn shouldn't either.
Right.
Probably, right? Kuhn should be just thinking about, should I call this guy or not? I'm getting this price. How often is he bluffing? That's it.
Yeah.
Right? And the end. So,
well, the end is Kuhn wins, and according to the solver, it's a break-even call. So
it's cool that it's a break-even call, actually. So even just in general, it's a break-even against this line, against a small blind flatting range. It's still a break-even call. That's neat.
Even though the decision should mostly be to fold, it's still a break-even call.
Right, and it's because it's such a polarizing board, and this line is so polarizing, too, and all the draws missed. It makes sense why you'd call sometimes, why it's at least okay to call. Music is my sunlight, and all I need is one mic, and I can show every single MC how it's done right. Every time I come by, I'm bound to leave them tongue-tied. I'm sipping on liquor, a quitter is what I'm not. We got one life, and I took a minor break, but I'm back to claim the throne. I'm gonna be traveling the globe, we still have time to make it home.